Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Cool Your Life Podcast Show. Guys, I know I didn't have the money I was trying to save, but my phone broke. I had an Android phone, and it just kept on messing up all year, and then it just finally broke, and now I can't use it. I got an old Android that I got before that one, and that don't work with the SIM card, so I just went on order me a phone. You know, I was trying to save for two paychecks. You know, and trying to pay some more bills down. But I needed a phone. And I got the iPhone XR. I don't know how good that phone is. I mean, I've been away from the iPhone for a long time. I used to have two iPhones. I still have the first iPhone. It's right in my closet. The very first iPhone. I still got it. But anyway, make a long story short, I got a phone. I couldn't wait. I just couldn't wait. So, you heard the stories about the fungus, the black plaque, the black death, and all those terrible penicides things that they was talking about in the other episodes. I just want to bring you to some more stuff on YouTube, and I get the people on YouTube to help me out to do this, you know, and try to explain it, what I'm talking about. But I do a good job to explain supernatural and all that stuff, especially Discovery, the best Star Trek. I'm not doing it. I'm being good. But it was a video that I want y'all to hear, you know. It's about some lakes that you go swimming to, and it was telling you, be careful, don't swim into those lakes. Probably on my phone, because I got a lot of other stuff on the computer. Oh, here it goes. I got it. Okay. This is some of the lakes that you don't go swimming in. And proof that you should never judge a book by its color. Now let's go listen to these videos, okay? Just to get this show interesting, to listen to other YouTubers and, you know, see other ideas on people do and all, you know? I like doing that, you know? It helped the show out too. So this is what I've been doing in January, looking for a new content on YouTube, and to help me do the show and all. Alright. I just hope y'all like it, you know. And all my kids doing well, you know. All of them, from Ashley on down. Okay. Anybody asks, I'm doing good too. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it very much. And my question, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Largest, measured in at 110 acres, about the same as 83 football fields. Although it wasn't
listen to it, learn something. This lake that made it a it's from Russia, too.
So get comfy, settle in, and prepare yourself for a story so dark it'll make you wish it wasn't real. This is the terrifying true tale of Lake Karachay. Back in 1945, the first nuclear bomb was used as a weapon during the Second World War. It was dropped by the Americans on Hiroshima, Japan, leveling 5 square miles of the city and killing up to 180,000 people. Tens of thousands perished immediately, and the effects of deadly radiation in the days and months that followed claimed around 100,000 more. It was the single most devastating weapon that had ever been developed, and it caught the eyes of leaders around the world. One of those was Stalin, the then leader of the Soviet Union. Determined to compete with the U.S., he ordered the development of a series of top-secret nuclear facilities in a location hidden from enemy eyes. These would be dedicated to producing the materials needed to create nuclear weapons. He settled on this region of central Russia, below the South Ural Mountains, which was far enough from the borders and other inhabited areas to keep the project hidden from the rest of the world. Between 1945 and 1948, the Mayak nuclear facility was erected on the shores of Lake Kizilhtash in total secrecy. Over 70,000 prisoners of war from 12 Gulag labor camps were forced to construct the enormous facility. They were also used to build a city nearby, which would be the home to 10,000 employees of the new plants, along with their families. This was roughly 60 miles from the closest city of Chelyabinsk, and so it was known simply by the last digits of its postal code, Chelyabinsk 40, or City 40. The government promised its citizens they'd never want for anything, and would have a great standard of living. Sounds like the dream, except the city, and all the plans around it, had to be kept secret. Anyone who refused this offer was sent straight to the gulags, as they'd been exposed to sensitive security information. So it wasn't like they had much of a choice. The gates of City 40 were guarded day and night. It was surrounded by fences and walls topped with barbed wire, and it wasn't marked on any Soviet Union maps. Unless citizens were granted special permission by the government, nobody was allowed to enter or leave City 40. And that's because almost as soon as Mayak and its city were complete, it began producing weapons-grade plutonium, something they didn't want the rest of the world to know.
Damn you, commercials.
In 1949, the Soviets had their hands on their first plutonium bomb, which was called First Lightning. The success fueled them to make even more atomic weapons, with around 44 cities similar to City 40, colloquially called closed cities, established around the Soviet Union. Some of the facilities attached to these housed all manner of nuclear research efforts, from plutonium production to uranium enrichment. But the Soviets weren't the inventors of the first closed cities. That idea came from the U.S.'s Richland City, which was secretively built around the Hanford nuclear plant, the same plant that supplied the plutonium for the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. Soviet spy circles had intercepted plans for this city, with Stalin deciding to use this information to follow in the U.S.'s footsteps. Although, that wasn't the only secret they stole. The majority of the Soviets' nuclear research had been stolen by atom spies involved in the Manhattan Project, the mission that developed the first nuclear bomb. But they hadn't managed to get their hands on everything. This meant there were huge holes in the Soviets' knowledge of nuclear physics. Combined with the pressure to save money, plant leaders were forced to cut a lot of corners regarding worker training, safety, and radiation monitoring. Workers were rarely properly protected, pollution was an afterthought, and horrendously, workers would clean up radioactive spills with their bare hands. They would only stop working when blood started pouring.
Man, that's crazy. You know, That's crazy. Make them people work in that stuff till they bleed to death. That's Iranian. What is wrong with Russia, man?
Pouring from their noses, a side effect of their bodies being broken down by lethal amounts of radiation. But that was the least of their problems. The 7 main reactors of MIAC utilized open-cycle water cooling systems to prevent the reactors from overheating. Here, water was pumped in from Lake Kizilhtash and the nearby Teka River, and into the reactor core itself. Then, without being processed or decontaminated, the water was pumped back into these same water sources. This meant millions of gallons of irradiated water was being dumped into the water the inhabitants of City 40 drank from and bathed in. And not just City 40. Villages along the Teka also relied on the river as their main water source, meaning a further 28,000 people were unknowingly reliant upon lethally tainted water sources. None of them knew they were living in a dangerously radioactive area. But this was just the start of MIAC's problems. In their bid to get plutonium production up and running as quickly as possible, they hadn't considered the extensive requirements needed to store all the radioactive waste products. In the first 3 years of operation, this was basically non-existent, and workers would simply dilute high levels of waste and dump it into the Teka River. By 1951, after it was clear this was causing huge amounts of environmental damage, they decided it was safer to dump all the waste in a stagnant body of water, Lake Karachay. It wasn't until 1953, 5 years after MIAC opened, that they began storing high-level waste in stainless steel tanks. Altogether, these 20 tanks could hold up to 1,600,000 gallons, more than 2 full Olympic swimming pools worth of radioactive waste. These were buried underground, surrounded in a 5-foot-thick concrete casing, and kept cool using an external water cooling system. All these elements were designed to keep the active waste from overheating, or at least they were meant to. Over time, the instruments for monitoring the tanks failed, but they couldn't be repaired because the level of radiation in the area was too high. Eventually, the waste in the tanks reached a boiling 662 degrees Fahrenheit. And then on September 29th, 1957, at 4:20 p.m., disaster struck. An explosion with the force of 100 tons of TNT shook the MIAC complex. The 5-foot concrete lid covering the tanks was blasted over 80 feet away, and 80 tons of radioactive waste began spewing out at an alarming rate. It's estimated this initial blast released a little less than half of the radioactivity measured at the famous Chernobyl explosion, which would occur less than 30 years later. Fortunately, 90% of the waste was liquid, irradiating only the nearby facility, but the remaining 10% was drawn into a radioactive plume that towered over half a mile high and began drifting northeast. In 11 hours, the radioactive particles in the plume were detected in Tumen, a city more than 200 miles away from MIAC. In a matter of days, almost 9,000 square miles of land, containing 217 towns and villages, with more than 270,000 people, was contaminated with lethal doses of radiation. This was the Kishtim disaster. There are only 2 other radioactive incidents in history more severe than this, Chernobyl and Fukushima. As the water supplies became increasingly contaminated from the spill, the government started to panic. They calculated that villages downstream from the disaster site, Berdyanish, Saltykova, and Galikava, would receive a huge cumulative dose of radiation inside of a month. At the time, the absorbed amount of radiation was measured in units called rads. Just 5 rads was enough to potentially and irreversibly damage a person's chromosomes. But the citizens of these villages would receive cumulative radiation doses of up to 300 rads. This meant serious radiation sickness, along with bone marrow and intestinal destruction. 10 days later, these villages, containing roughly 1,500 people, were evacuated. The villages themselves were destroyed, incinerated where possible, but the survivors were told nothing. Fortunately, a follow-up study revealed no long-term radiation damage was detected in the survivors. But they weren't the only ones to lose their homes. 8 months later, a further 6,500 people were evacuated from 23 more villages. During this time, they'd consumed contaminated crops, drunk contaminated water, and lived on contaminated lands. But suspiciously, no registry was ever set up to follow their medical histories. A year after the incident, all pine trees within a 12.5-mile radius of the disaster site had died. Instead of declaring a radioactive disaster, the Soviet government simply covered the incident up. No one would know about the full extent of the Kyshtym disaster for more than 30 years. But the horror did...
That just sound like Russia, man. That's definitely sound like Russia. Something Putin would do today. You know, the other president before him, he was just an evil... Some of my gun, too.
Didn't stop there. The sheer amount of untreated radioactive waste that had been dumped into Lake Karachay meant that, over time, it accumulated 120 million curies of radioactivity. By comparison, the Chernobyl disaster released approximately 185 million curies of radioactivity in total. However, the radioactive isotope cesium-137, which is responsible for long-term land contamination, was 40 times higher in Lake Karachay than at Chernobyl. That meant the lake and the area surrounding it would remain contaminated for much, much longer. It also meant that if anyone decided to visit the most polluted part of the lake, or just dip their foot in the water, within an hour, they'd receive a lethal dose of more than 500 rats. You might think this would destroy their foot, maybe see it shrivel up, melt off, or even sprout a few more toes, depending on how you think radiation works.
Have you ever played a tower defense game?
But actually, this would result in acute radiation sickness. The exposure would begin to destroy all the cells in the entire body rapidly. How rapidly? Well, after 30 days, there's a 95% chance you'd be dead. Now, by 1960, Lake Karachay appeared to be drying up. By 1967, after a hot summer followed by a dry winter, the remaining water evaporated. This was originally seen as a blessing, but it was actually more of a curse. It meant all the still radioactive sediment was contained in the dry dust layering the lake bed. All it would take was a gust of wind to stir it up and create another radioactive incident. But the region didn't get a gust of wind. It got a wind storm. The sediment was spread far and wide over the region, dusting the citizens and environment with yet another dose of deadly radiation. It wasn't until 1973 that the Soviet government began the arduous process of filling in the lake with tens of thousands of concrete blocks to prevent any remaining sediment from shifting. It took decades of work, but by 2015, the lake was finally filled in. You'd think that during this time, the Soviet Union was doing everything in its power to alert its citizens to the danger and keep them safe. But unbelievably, it wasn't until 1989, 3 years after the meltdown at Chernobyl, that information about the events in the Southern Urals was finally declassified. After the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, City 40 had its existence formally acknowledged by the new government and was renamed Ozersk. Descendants of the original population still live there, and today the inhabitants receive everything their government promised them way back in the 40s. But now the citizens are aware that their children are more likely to be born with serious health conditions, that their water is contaminated, that many of the beautiful areas surrounding them are no-go zones, and that their average life expectancy is much lower than the rest of the country. While the story of Lake Karachay and the Kyshtym disaster haunts Russia's history books, it's not the only lake in the country known for being impossibly and irreversibly polluted. A little over 26 miles away from Karachay, the town of Karabash still has a lake. Although the water, like a lot of the surrounding land and forests, holds a defiled reddish-orange hue. That's because back in 1910, Carabash became the site of a copper smelting plant. Over 180 tons of sulfur dioxide and heavy metals were released into the environment from this site each year. Even though it was eventually shut down in 1989, the area still holds 500 times the normal concentration of heavy metals, like iron and copper oxide, in it. While spending a few hours swimming in this sludge might not have any immediate effect, if you ingested it, the chances are you'd contract heavy metal poisoning. In the short term, you'd get pretty sick, but long-term residents of the area suffer from higher rates of skin diseases, cancer, strokes, and congenital malformations compared to the rest of the country. So, obviously, Russia is home to some pretty dangerous bodies of water. But nuclear contamination and pollution aside, there are more, even deadlier lakes all around the world. But before I show them to you, why don't you hit those like and subscribe buttons down below? Just those two clicks helps keep me afloat. All done? Amazing. Right, where are we heading next? Kawaijin. There's nothing more inviting than beautiful turquoise waters, is there? I mean, this place looks like a private pool on top of a mountain. I'm reaching for my swim shorts already. Except, it looks a little too turquoise, doesn't it? Well, before you go jumping in, you should probably know that this pool is located in the active volcanic crater of Kawaijin in Java. Its turquoise coloring comes from the range of materials dissolved in the water, including hydrochloric and sulfuric acids produced by the volcanic activity below. Not only does this make the water look gorgeous, but it also gives it a pH of 0.3. For those who don't speak science, neutral elements, like water, have a pH of around 7. Stomach acid has a pH of 1. So this stuff is straight up corrosive. So much so that if you were to dip your foot into this pool, even briefly, there's a chance you'd come out with chemical burns depending on how far the solution penetrated your skin. I'm talking red, irritated skin, blistering, even scarring. But if you were to take a full body dip, staying there for as long as possible, your entire body, even your teeth, would dissolve in roughly 15 hours. Yeah, I'm putting my swim shorts down. Blue Lagoon. Now, naturally inviting turquoise waters aren't just found in the craters of active volcanoes. Over in the UK, another deceptively beautiful lake can be found in a pit dug into the Derbyshire countryside. This is the Blue Lagoon, or at least it used to be. In 2013, and again in 2020, the local council dyed the brilliant blue...
Now, everybody know that used to be a movie, right? The Blue Lagoon. But I didn't know it was real, did you?
Water's black, to try and dissuade eager swimmers from stepping foot in it. Why? Because it's toxic. It's actually situated in an old limestone quarry, which, after it was disused in 1952, was used by the Royal Air Force to store chemical weapons until 1960. Eventually, it was emptied out and left to gather rainwater. But the water turned turquoise, as limestone rocks leached calcite crystals into the water, giving the lake a pH of 11.3. Considering ammonia has a pH of 11.5 and bleach is about 12, going anywhere near the water in this lagoon is a horrible idea. Despite signs warning about skin irritation, stomach problems, and even rashes, it wasn't enough to stop people being drawn in during lockdown. Not even all the dead animals and trash that have found their way into these deadly waters over the years was enough to keep them away. Maybe what this lagoon needs is a new sign, one that says, "Only idiots swim here." Yeah, that should do it. Berkeley Pit. The horizon of Butte, Montana looks like any other city, until you clock the gigantic 1 mile long and half mile wide pit gouged into the landscape. Yeah, the one filled with ominous black and red liquid that's 1,780 feet deep. This is the Berkeley Pit, an open pit copper mine dug back in the 1950s, where it produced nearly 17,000 tons of copper a day. However, it was closed in 1982 after its profitability plummeted. They shut off the pumps, keeping the groundwater at bay, and the pit began to flood, but the water that filled it up was laden with chemicals and metals leached from the rock, like arsenic, cadmium, zinc, and sulfuric acid, giving it that devilish color, and then some. In 1995, a flock of 342 snow geese were found dead in its waters. They'd been rescued. A squall, but little did they know the lake has a pH of 2.5, meaning it was acidic. While it was only about as acidic as substances like lemon juice, the poor birds were found with burn sores all over their bodies. Montana has since begun water treatment efforts to pump and treat the pit. But still, while it wouldn't kill you, stepping foot in something with that kind of history can't be good for you. Grand Prismatic Spring. Now, not all deadly bodies of water look so ominous. If the Grand Prismatic Spring of Yellowstone National Park is anything to go by, found in the Midway Geyser Basin, this is the third largest natural hot spring in the world, at 370 feet in diameter, making it bigger than an entire football field. The incredible concentric circles of vibrant blues, greens, yellows, and oranges make it look like someone has painted a target onto the bedrock beneath. But the color actually comes from heat-loving bacteria. As the geothermically heated water erupts from the center of the spring, it reaches a spicy 189 degrees Fahrenheit. When it spreads out, the water cools, allowing rings of different bacteria that thrive at different temperatures, ranging from 131 to 189 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty hot. So hot that if you were to put your foot into the center of the circle for just a few seconds, you'd be left with third-degree burns, though it could always be worse. Back in 2016, a young man named Colin Scott slipped and fell into a nearby geyser and was boiled alive. That's horrifying. But what made it even worse was that the water here is slightly acidic, and combined with the intense heat, the poor man's body dissolved overnight. No trace of him was ever found. So if you ever visit this hot spot, be sure to stay well away from those colorful edges. Mm-hmm. Rio Tinto. Snaking over the Spanish countryside is a river that looks more like a forbidden gummy worm than water. This is the Rio Tinto, a name that helpfully translates to the Stained River. At more than 62 miles in length, roughly half of the river is colored red, orange, and yellow. That's because it flows through an area that's rich with sulfur ore deposits, which formed hundreds of millions of years ago, when there were active volcanoes in the area. Thousands of years of mining have also amplified the process, increasing the amount of exposed ore. This has made the river incredibly acidic, meaning the only thing that can live in the water is sulfur-consuming bacteria. As they consume the sulfur, they produce ferric iron, a rust-colored substance that gives the river its red hues. Together, the ore deposits and bacteria drop the pH level of the water as low as 1.5, meaning this river is more like vinegar than water. Now, dipping your foot in this wouldn't cause any initial damage, but leaving it in for an extended period would result in irritation and redness. Well, that doesn't sound too bad. Even so, I don't think anyone should go splashing about in it. Lake Natron. Tanzania is famous for its stunning Serengeti National Park. But surprisingly, it's less well known for the 490 square mile body of water on its northern border that has the power to turn living things to stone. I know that last bit sounds like something out of Greek mythology, but trust me, it's all real. This is Lake Natron, a lake in an area that's so hot it loses most of its water to evaporation, leaving the salty, mineral-rich remnants to crust over the surface like big red scabs. The water that remains is so saturated with salt that most birds flying over, hoping for a quick dip, suddenly find themselves coated in crystals. These fatally calcify and trap the poor creatures in a matter of minutes. And that's not all. The sodium and mineral-rich bedrock makes the environment strongly alkaline, meaning the remaining water has a pH of 10 on a mild day and a pH of 12 when the waters reach a scalding 140 degrees Fahrenheit. So, at its best, taking a dip in this lake would be like wading through salty milk of magnesia. But at its worst, it'd be like swimming through boiling hot bleach. While it wouldn't burn you immediately, keeping it on your skin would give you an alkaline burn. These are often worse than acid burns, as alkaline chemicals can penetrate and damage deeper layers of tissue. Something a group of very unlucky wildlife photographers almost learned the hard way back in 2007. As they were flying over the lake, their helicopter crashed into the water. The hot water immediately began burning their eyes and practically blinding them. But they miraculously managed to travel around 2 miles to the nearest solid ground. Fortunately, they all recovered. But any longer in there, and it might have been a very different story. Boiling Lake. Do you know what a fumarole is? Aside from being a really fun word to say, fumaroles are openings in the planet's crust, which emit superheated steam.
Yeah, I told you. You wouldn't learn a lot of stuff from these YouTube videos. I mean, I was sitting there watching this part and learning about a fumarole. I'm like, a fumarole? Then explain to me what it was. Listen.
Steam and gases. But when a fumarole gets flooded, that's when you get something like the Boiling Lake in Dominica. At roughly 250 feet wide, this bubbling water is usually enveloped in an ever-present vapor cloud. That's because the water here fluctuates between a spicy 180 and 197 degrees Fahrenheit. Although, that's just the temperature at the edges. Scientists haven't been able to measure the temperature at the center, where the lake is actively boiling, because it's simply too hot for them to handle. It's believed that this lake lies just above the local water table, which is the natural boundary between the dry soil and the saturated soil of the earth. This is what keeps the lake from drying up entirely, even though much of its water is lost to evaporation. Now, it's pretty obvious that sticking any part of your body in this is a bad idea. That's a second, maybe even third degree burn just waiting to happen. But it's not the only reason why this lake is one of the most dangerous in the world. Way back in 1900, a group of hikers was clamoring around the area when all of a sudden, the lake released a cloud of toxic volcanic gases. They didn't stand a chance, and sadly, didn't survive. So if you decide to visit this lake, don't just bring your water wings. You're gonna need a gas mask as well. Okay, I know we really shouldn't, but which of these forbidden bodies of water do you want to visit the most? And have you ever seen any of them with your own eyes? Let me know down in the comments below, and thanks for watching.
Boy, I hope none of y'all had to go swimming in none of them lakes, especially in Russia. Stay away from the water in Russia. They will kill you in Russia. I mean, having your own citizens put their hands in, that's just mean. I mean, that's really mean, guys. Good money. But, wow, man. So, I just hope everybody learned something from this. I just wanted to do this, the video. This one. And just talk about what's going on in the world, and there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's just, to me, it's just too much going on, you know, it's just too much people gotta take in, in this country, and other countries as well, and to me, it's just like, a revolution, you know. Y'all remember the movie The Matrix, right? Yeah. It warned us about this. And I believe, I really believe this is all a simulacrum. a computer simulator, you know, and that I really believe that, you know. Okay, and the reason I believe that because the maintenance, they explain it just so you can make you think about some of this stuff, you know. Just make you think of some of that. So anybody knowing what the maintenance is, go watch the maintenance. Okay, go look it up on your phone or speak into the your cable with your comp, because you can do that now. And they say maintenance, okay? And I'm sure the guy, I forgot the name, the actor to play in it, but Will Smith's so-called wife, she's in one of the maintenance movies, and I don't know if you play the game or not. The game is pretty good. I ain't get into it yet, but the new one, I ain't seen yet either, you know, and they, I don't know what they say about the new one. Okay, okay, oh boy, I don't think the blue people did well, so I don't think the new maintenance did well either. I don't know. I think the blue people, John Campton's blue people did well. I think it did like he wanted it to do. And I'm hoping it did, because he's a great director. And The Blue People is a great movie. And I hope they have it on Disney soon. I should have just went in the store, went in the movies and watched it on the movies, you know. But I'm one of those people that's getting lazy and laying on the couch to watch the screening movies, you know. Not getting myself activated and go out to the movies no more, like we used to do. You know, y'all remember the movie theaters? Y'all know what a movie theater is? Get away! I gotta tell myself to get away from the streaming services and go out to the movies. You know. But yeah, I mean, this. Give them a break. Give them the streaming services a break. And go back to the movies, guys. I mean, you're paying the same thing that you pay in the movie theaters. I mean, Netflix is now like $15 to $18. That's a movie ticket right there. No? So, you might as well just get yourself out and get the family out and go to a movie. Because you... Well, one movie is $15. But it's nothing on Netflix. You ain't gonna see the new movies. And the other movies, they do come on the other streaming services, but you gotta pay the $18. But you're paying the service, the monthly fee, and you gotta pay for the new movie. What the heck? You know? I mean, I'm going back to the movies. I'm just going back. No. I just like to be around people or just being out, you know. And that's me. I don't know about y'all, but that's me. I encourage y'all to get out. Just get out and go to the movies. Have fun. Enjoy your family. Eat popcorn candy like we used to do back in the days and all. Don't break that family condition on the weekends of going out to the movies and stuff like that. I know you love your streaming services. You love your 65-inch TV, 70-inch TV, 80-inch TV. But going out to the movies and seeing everybody else like what you like, meeting the people, discussing the movie with other fans of the actor in the movie, because all they do is make sequels now. So you're going to discuss the actors in the movies. How many, what one you saw? I saw 6. This is 7. I saw 8. This is 9. Yeah. Y'all know what movie I'm talking about, right? The Fast and the Furious. How many times you're going to be fast and you're going to be furious? About 9 to 12 times? Good God Almighty. But I love the movie. I love the Fast and the Furious. I'm not down on your movies, Fast and the Furious fans. I'm not down on your movie. It's fascinating. Live long and prosper. That's all I'm saying. Let's move on. You know, but I know some of the Fast and Furious said, oh, look how many Star Wars they made. Look how much Star Trek they made. Well, hey, look how long they've been around, too. So, look like we got a bigger community than you do. All you got is action and adventure and shooting. We got characters going to live forever, like Darth Vader and Mr. Spock and Michael Burton and Captain Sisko, Captain Kirk, Captain Picard. No, we got all of them going to live forever. We going to know these characters, the Fast and the Furious. Do y'all have Fast and the Furious conventions? I mean, you got 9 to 12 or 14 movies out of the Fast and the Furious. Do you have Fast and the Furious conventions? They got James Bond's conventions, the science fiction, you know. And to me, the Fast and the Furious now falls into the science fiction block. Because some of the movies went that direction. You know, cars swinging in the air, cars jumping in on one mountain and all that. Damn, I thought even Evel Knievel came back to life. Wanting to give it a second shot to shooting over the Grand Canyon. I was excited. I thought he was dead. I was waiting for him to get out one of those calls. I'm going to say yee-haw for him too. Nope. Next, I was waiting for Garth Brooks. Swinging. I got friends down in the low places. I'm sorry, Garth Brooks. I love that song. Let's move on, people, before I get in trouble. I got friends in low places. Next thing you know, all the stores today to come back, come out the car. I'll be back. Then you see Rambo with his boxing gloves. Rambo. Rambo meet Rocky Mike Tyson. And then the Rock comes over, jumping off the mountain, swinging, yeah! Yeah! And all the Fast and the Furious characters will be singing, swinging over the mountain. The cars, yeah. Oh man, stop. I love that movie though. But yeah, I love the movie, you know. Y'all probably didn't get the joke. Some of y'all, even the fans of the movie, probably definitely didn't get it. I don't care. Do it look like I care? Too bad you can't see me anyway. Do it look like I care in my voice? Huh? Is it hear me? But you can't get me. Well, guys, I don't know. And some of these movies that we be watching, including Star Trek, if we ever get a Star Trek number movie in Star Wars. Some of these movies, it will be telling us about things that we already know, but we don't pay attention to. And some of y'all probably just go for entertainment, but The Fast and the Furious is based on the CIA and mixing with Black Ops. They was working with the CIA and Black Ops. And we all know that the CIA got its own army, secret army, you know? And that's what we're going to go into next, you know? We're going to go into the eyes of the CIA and some of this deep, deep secrets. Much as we can, you know? And try to wake a lot of people up and let y'all know what the heck is going on in the world, you know? And some of these movies is trying to tell us something really deep. Some of these YouTube channels is trying to tell us something, and we just pass it on, you know, thinking they crazy. But it's not, man. It's not. It's a message. It's a message in the message, telling us to wake up. Look what's going on, you know. And you got to wake up. I don't know what more can I tell you and how to explain it to you and get the YouTube videos just to show you that it's a lot more going on and beat that high. Now look at this video. Wow. This video talking about why under the English 5.1 is a hook of what? You'll see it soon, the computer act right. But I don't know what more to say. This morning, do everybody like Eddie Murphy? Because he got some good projects that coming out. You know, very good projects is coming out. And one of those projects is Beverly Hills Cops. That's right.
Every color.
Beverly Hills Cops.
The first major update for Unreal Engine 5 just released called 5.1. And it is a huge deal. The reason why is one word, and that is foliage. Since Unreal Engine 5 came out, it introduced a revolutionary new way of rendering geometry called nanite. To briefly sum up nanite, every object you see in computer graphics is composed of tiny flat planes of geometry called polygons. And the more polygons you have in your environment, the longer it will take to render. This is why video games have developed a system called level of detail, or LOD for short. The further away an object is from the camera, the less polygons it will use to render that object. This makes games run faster since there's less polygons that have to be rendered. But it is very time consuming to create all those LODs. Nanite replaces LODs because it uses dynamic level detail. This means you can have an object with millions of polygons without any LODs because polygons dynamically deform, lowering the amount of polys on an object. A good example of nanite in use is this desert. If I come up to lit, nanites, triangles, we can see nanite in action. Every color is an individual polygon, and there are millions of them, without a single LOD being used. The biggest issue with nanites is that it did not work with foliage. This means we still have to rely on level of detail for foliage like shrubs, grass, and trees. Trees generally use billboards as the lowest level of detail, which is just a flat plane with a texture that, as you can see, does not look very nice. Here is an example of what a billboard looks like. I have Unreal Engine 5 opened up, and in this environment, all the trees are using level of details, because that was the only option. Now, if I move my camera far away, you can see that the trees change LODs until they are using billboards, and the transition looks pretty bad. Notice how even the shadows disappear, because billboards only block light if it's facing it. Now in Unreal Engine 5.1, we finally get nanite foliage. To enable nanite on foliage is pretty simple. You want to open up the static mesh, and within here, make sure enable nanite support is turned on, and this is unique for foliage, select preserve area. That's how if you aren't too far away, the object won't disappear. And then press apply changes. I went ahead and did the exact same process to all the trees in this environment. Now when the camera flies away, there is no LOD transitions or billboards. The trees retain the same quality as if they're being viewed up close. And the shadows do not disappear at long distances. There is no loss in performance. In fact, we gained an extra 5 frames. So it is more performant than LOD.
Wow. So you hear this with this video?
In certain scenarios. Here's another example showing the power of nanites. This is what it looks like without nanites. The level of detail is noticeable because you can see that in the distance, the trees are just textures. Also, the lighting is casting incorrect shadows. And this is the same environment, but with nanite enabled. The trees far away are no longer being faked by inaccurate textures. All the trees are real geometry that exists in the world, and we did not lose any performance. I wanted to push the limit of nanite foliage, so I create a forest that is 4 square kilometers. In total, there's over 100,000 trees in this environment, and I'm still getting decent performance. As a reminder, this
okay,
is all
people.
In real time.
This
level of density was only possible in pre-
this remember Star Trek, Picard, all the games, getting them back together. That's Crooney Warp, Jody, and all Beverly Hill, Beverly Crusher, and Captain Picard, Riker, and the whole entire gang of Star Trek Generation. It's going to be good. It will be on February the 16th. I will be there. I will be watching. I can't wait. It's going to be good. And I guess Strange New Worlds will follow it right after the 10th episode. I guess it's going to get 10 episodes. They said it's going to be the 10-hour movie, so it's going to get 10 episodes. So Star Trek Picard going to get 10 episodes. Maybe Strange New Worlds might get this, maybe 11 and 12. We already know Discovery is going to get 10. I don't know how much Lower Decks going to get and the other cartoon going to get. It's going to be the other half of the first season of that cartoon. But more Star Wars episodes of the Mandalorian, and hopefully we get more episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi and the Book of Boba Fett, and because all of those was good too. I love those, especially the Book of Boba Fett. We only got like 5 of those, so hopefully Disney give us some more of those. And I love the Disney Star Wars cartoons too, and we got a new Star Wars cartoon. It's about the little girl traveling with the stormtroopers, and it's pretty good, you know. And I just watch it with my Saturday breakfast, you know. And but it's good. Excuse me, people, because in my building, all the fathers got COVID-19. And the weather keep changing, and even in here, and you get sick, you know, but I don't want that COVID, you know, and already been out the hospital, been in the hospital and everything, in September and all, then foot in July, and that all of that hold everything back. Just getting back on my feet, get back on my feet and do my show, you know, and then more stuff. So just pray that I will do good, people. I know y'all Christians, pray that I will be healthy for many years, many months, many more, and that I won't get sick, or my leg will get better, and don't want to get sick. I will be able to get on my show and just play for my show that I get more audience. Because I think I lost a lot of audience when I got sick too. So I'm trying to bring back those audience. But thank you, Baltimore, New York, and whatever city that you're listening to, whatever platform that you listen to, or whatever state that you're in, pass the matches on. The Quay Whitlock Show is back. Let the people who used to listen to it in California and all, had them to pass the message on. Let them know that I'm back. And sooner or later, I'm going to do some interviews, because with Fiverr, they got people to do interviews with you to help you promote your book and your podcast. So I will be doing interviews too. But that will be in time. I ain't gonna give you no time period. But I'm very shy and everything. But I'm sure some of y'all get other podcasters and y'all see some of the interviews they be doing and all. I probably will be on one of those podcasters, or maybe a lot of them, okay, in the future, okay. So I just gotta work to get my TV. I just ordered my phone, new phone, iPhone XR. I don't know how that phone is due. It's how it's good and everything. I think it came after the iPhone 10 something. But hopefully, pray that the phone work and everything. I just ordered it. I was trying to hold out until I get paid in March. But I really need a phone, emergency phone. Because I don't have nothing, no communication in the house. And the phone is broke, you know. So, just pray for me and my family. And I will pray for y'all guys, okay. And thank y'all. Pass the message on. Thank my promoters. All my promoters who do a hard and great job to promote the show, especially the man in New York podcast, New York podcast. Thank y'all guys and girls and all the other promoters on Fiverr and all. Thank y'all. Y'all hard work pays off, and I appreciate it so much. Just thank you so much. Thank you all my listeners and everything, okay? I love y'all guys. God bless y'all. And I'll see you on the next episode of the Quay Whitlock Podcast Show. Live long and prosper. May the force of God be with you. And Ashley, we love you.